Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, good morning, friends. This is Paula Thompson coming to you from beautiful Colorado. And with me is my dear friend and co-host Ann Garner today. And we're going to be, this is the second in our series on the Cosmic Citizen about laughter and the benefits of laughter. And we have a special pre-recorded show for today with Dr. Madan Kataria. And the bio is on the list. We're going to be listening to the recording Crystalline and I did. Crystalline is in New York this weekend, at her community building workshop, you may remember that we had two people from the M. Scott Peck Foundation on community building, and we interviewed two guests a few weeks back. Krislyn is there with them this weekend doing a community building session with about 10 friends, your Rancho Book Reader friends. So we wish you well, Krislyn. If you get a chance to call in, that would be great. Maybe she's on her lunch break. She can make a call in. We had a blast interviewing Dr. Kataria. He is just wonderful. He's the founder of the Laughter Yoga Clubs movement, which started in 1995. He was researching the benefits of laughter and became amazed by the profound physiological and psychological effects and benefits of laughter. Krislyn's father, Richard Beek, was the one that told her about Dr. Kataria. And so she he showed up at a conference that they were having in the Southeast last year, and he led everybody in some laughter yoga for just 1 minute worth of laughter. Krislyn's father, Richard, is also a medical doctor, and he might call in and give us some of the benefits of laughter that he has discovered. He sent Krislyn and I a list. I think there must be 50 items on this list. So, and before I forget, that opening song was by the beautiful Allison Zopel, and it is called Feeling of Our Love, and that's an original composition by Allison. So Anne, are you with me?
Yes, I'm enjoying listening, and I listened to the broadcast when you first aired it. I had a meeting, and right at the last minute, it was canceled. It's interesting, I'm getting a call coming in. I don't know if you heard that little bloop. But it was very, very delightful. Just made my week. So what a joy to join you today in the introduction. And the humor in it, just incredible, incredible.
Well,
so, did you find it? I know you were having trouble finding it. And I'm trying to get online now with the chat room. So everything worked out okay, right?
Well, yeah, I found it. My friend Larry led me right to it.
Well, Larry, thanks. What would we do without Larry? And, you know, Paula, the humor is so important. And we're told in the Urantia book that the humor here on the planet, they really admire our humor, because we had to find a way over this over time to develop some humor. Some of it can be, y'all talked about this on the air, I think, last week, that some of it is just a little too crude. It can be tricky. For me, last night as I was drifting off to sleep and I prayed about it, all of a sudden, and because I expected to wake up this morning with some stories in my mind, all of a sudden these stories started popping in my mind about my own self. See, if we can find humor when we do the ridiculous, instead of being embarrassed, and you know, that is true humor. And it's not cutting down anybody else. It's not degrading. That's when humor is not appropriate. And I believe they call that celestial artisans. That prophetic joy. I find that interesting. Do you remember that quote? Prophetic joy?
Yeah. Prophetic joy, yeah.
Isn't that an interesting statement?
Right.
It will perhaps be difficult for mortals to envisage this phase of humor, but we do get a peculiar satisfaction out of the assurance that all things work together for good, for spirits and Marantians as well as for mortals. This aspect of celestial humor grows out of our faith in the loving overcare of our superiors and in the divine stability of supreme directors. Now, in the one column, that's page 548, I believe that's paper 48, section 4, the reversion directors. And the more this really hit me, and it really has helped me through some interesting times, I'll use that word. Well, we've had some dynamic times together, you know that, and you have, and seems like it happens when you're traveling, you know? It's quite remarkable.
Well, you know, the story of the reversion directors is one that just about everybody who reads your Rancher book ends up just thrilled by the aspect that humor exists throughout the cosmos. And as you pointed out, it's not base humor that laughs at the expense of someone else, or vile humor that just is a laugh out of embarrassment for, you know, lack of anything better to do. But it's true enlightened humor. And one of the things that they do for us is they revert. The reversion directors are people, humans that have ascended, just like you and I will ascend, according to the Rancher book. Excuse me. Excuse me, ma'am. Got a frog there.
Need some of my natural peppermint oil that I use here that my precious German friend makes for me.
Yeah,
I put it on mute, and every time I've already done it.
And you've already got it. Sorry, folks. Anyway, if you get a frog, you got to get him out of there. the reversion directors are actually, let's say they're in the same class as us. And as we ascend into the next world and the worlds beyond that, the reversion directors will lead us in reversion, which is to make us remember previous stages of our existence and the silly things we did. And it's kind of a look back at where we've been, and so we can laugh about who we were. And this really resonated with me because one of the things my brother, I think I mentioned my brother last week, he was very funny. He was the one in my family that just kept everybody in stitches all the time. We'd all get together and sit around the table, and my brother would start to reminisce about things, and before we knew it, we'd all be hysterical. And he was a classic reversion director for my family. He could take us back to, you remember that time? And before we knew it, we'd all be laughing hysterically. And so that's what really, gets me going with reversion directors, and because I had one in my family.
Well, our reversion director was Steve's father, who was born in 1895, and he was a remarkable storyteller of the old Western, you know, type, a true cowboy. Can you imagine? My father-in-law was born in 1895. I am not that old, folks. He was in his 40s when he got married. First got married and had Steve, and then Steve was 37 when we got married. So, you know, it was interesting. Our kids, they love to just sit and listen to Pop tell his stories. And one of my favorite stories to tell on him, now think about it. When we got married in 75, Pop would have been 80, right? Well, I was, we moved 5 minutes away from them so we could, you know, we wanted the kids to have that impact. Plus, they ended up living with us their last years of their life, and they both lived to be age 96. Until the last moments of his passing over, Paula, he had humor. Isn't that delightful? He saw the angel coming, and he had humor with it. He said, what if I'm just not ready, you know, ready to go, and a fella needs his hat and his boots? And I had to go upstairs and find his hat. I said, I can't find your boots. He said, well, they just going to have to wait on me. You go find my hat and my boots. I mean, how many people know that they're leaving this life and can still be chuckling? But when we first moved here, and he was 80-something years old, I was taking him to the dentist. And I looked around at him because, boy, the man always looked incredibly young. And I said, Pop, you're amazing. You hold your age so well. I've never known you to look old. And he quipped quickly. He said, all you've ever known me as is an old man. You have no point of reference. And what a joy, what a lesson for all of us.
Here's a story that has been cherished in my family for years, and we have several like this, and I know you do. Children are amazing, and they're so funny. And this was probably back in, oh gosh, 69. I had a 4-year-old nephew at that time. And he had come over, he and his dad and mom, my sister, had all come over to the house. And it was a beautiful summer day, and probably a Sunday, and we were all together. And my nephew and my brother-in-law, Al, and my father were all out mowing the lawn together. My brother-in-law loved my dad so much. And so whenever they came over, he was just with my dad. Whatever my dad was doing, my brother-in-law was there with my dad. And so my nephew, the 4-year-old Patrick, he was going to be right beside both of them as well. And here's the three of them out mowing the backyard. And they're walking along, mowing and mowing. And us girls are sitting in the kitchen drinking a cup of coffee, and we're watching out the back window and watching these guys mowing the lawn. And then they stopped, and they all bent over. They were all looking at the lawnmower.
Uh-huh.
And so we didn't think much of it. We started talking again, and pretty soon they come in, and they're covered. All three of them are covered with little drops of oil.
Little drops of oil?
Yeah, little speckles of oil. And my mother said to my nephew, Patrick, "Pat, what happened?" And Pat said, "I don't know. Grandpa farted and the whole thing blew up."
That is a great family, Paula, that can laugh at itself in those moments. You have such a keen sense of humor, and of course people have heard me say it and they probably get tired of it, but it doesn't matter. Such an honor. The years that we did travel together doing those big health shows and expos, and how many people would average coming through there each weekend?
Well, you know, the show would have 100,000 people walking through it in a weekend, so.
So we were on the floor from 9 or 10 in the morning till 9 or 10 at night. So
yeah,
we needed,
the way I figured it out,
we needed reversion directors, and we'd go back to the room so exhausted and turn the light off, like two little silly college, you know, like we were in high school, or you know, and we'd just lay there and start finding humor in some of the challenging things that had happened, because we had some mighty interesting people that showed up at those booths.
Oh, gosh.
I really begin to appreciate your humor. It got us through some really interesting times.
Well, we had, you know, and you and I could go on all day about just things that happened at the expo. But I always remember one story that you shared with us. Because invariably, you know, folks, Ann and I worked these expos for several years together, and they were called the Whole Life Expo. That was generally the one that we did, but it was mostly the New Age expos. That was the predominant modality, was the New Age, and it was wonderful. Some of them were great fun. The San Francisco Expo was like a big family reunion. It was for the New Age community in San Francisco what a Urantia conference does for us. And they would all come together. They would wear their beautiful flowing butterfly costumes and fairy costumes. And they would come dressed as goddesses. And it was just, the place was electric. It would just come alive. And it was really, really fun. Always in the same place, this concourse exhibition hall had a lot of natural light in it, a lot of wood, natural. It was just a beautiful space for this show to happen in. And so we had been working the show all weekend, and I, you know, every once in a while you leave and you walk around the show and then you come back. I think Larry Watkins probably worked this show with us a time or two, too.
Oh yeah.
And I came back to the booth, and Ann said, "Oh, Paula, you can't believe what happened." I said, "What?" She said, "This guy came up. He was wearing a turban, and he came up to the booth, and he said, 'Oh, Urantia.'" Urantia. Yes. The angels are giving me a message for you, Urantians. And I said, what did you say, Anne? And you said, well, I said, that's wonderful. What is the message they are giving us? And you said, he went, let me see. Oh, yes, I am getting it now. They say, hello.
That was it. That was it. Yeah, I expected this huge, you know, message, and it was not. And it was in that moment, I tried not to damage the personality of that human because I really, you know, but yet I realized, you know what, that's what angels would probably say to us. Hello. Instead
hello.
Of
hey, hello.
He says, thou art da-da, called to be da-da-da. No,
yeah.
Quite delightful.
I said, I asked you, I said, what did you say back? He said, I just said, tell him, hello.
No,
I'm back. Yeah. Yeah, we had great fun doing that. You had to, you know, you had to have a sense of humor with those because you always got somebody coming up and saying stuff like that. It was really fun. And sometimes, you know, they'd be pretty right on, spot on. And I mean, I had a fellow come up to me one time and say, I have a message for you from the beings that manage this world. I said, okay, what is it? He said, well, they want you to know that you're doing a good job. And that they want you to keep up the good work. And I said, well, thanks. That's I really appreciate that. He said, and a little more. They say that they know that's easy for them to say, them being up there and you being down here on this most difficult planet.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, there's something about that that just touched my heart, you know. Now, I don't know if it's real and I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I just take it all with the intent. And it's just like Jesus said, you know, from now on you will be able to discern the truth regardless of its channel is apparently human.
Right. And you do have a quickening when it's and by the way, I wanted to call my prophet buddy to have him call in and tell a famous story that he tells from the pulpit. Maybe I can get him to call in next week at Guard's house. And I'm not gonna spoil it. It is so funny that people just you cannot help but laugh because he has prophetic laughter and prophetic joyous jokes. So it's a real story, but it is unbelievable. But, you know, right before we went on the air, I said there's a story, and I don't know if this has ever happened to anybody, but I was getting on a plane to go to Miami to meet you to do an expo. And Steve was taking me. I ran to the gate. They were announcing, you know, getting on the flight. And now this would never happen in today's environment of the way, you know, all the strict watching and looking. So I go, I hand my ticket. She looks at it. She said, yes, go. I go down and it splits off. It wise off, you know. You don't see that anymore. It just wise off. Well, being left-handed, I naturally bared to the left. That's just a tendency of left-handed people. I get on the plane, I settle down, and this older couple sitting next to me begin to talk about what they were going to be doing. Well, I assumed Miami, and they started talking about a Broadway show. And I said, excuse me, I just wanted to let y'all are going to a Broadway play? Yes, yes. So I thought, this poor old couple, they're little minds, you know. They've retired to Florida, and they think they're still in New York City. Then they started talking about going to the Statue of Liberty. And I said, this poor little couple. And all of a sudden, the pilot came on and started talking about what we were looking at. And I looked out and realized, oh, my God, I'm going north. I'm not going south. I was on the wrong plane.
Oh, no.
That Y, one to the right was going to Miami, and to the left was going to New York City. So, you know, that movie Home Alone.
Oh, my gosh.
I had to go all the way to New York City. And they, and you know, even in the middle of it, though, I started laughing at me. I said, well, I haven't been to New York since I got married. And so I ended, and you know what, thinking back, I think that may have been one of the expos that you were unable to be at. And I was embarrassed, but yet I realized, well, you know, you're not really thinking about it when you've already handed in your ticket and then it wires off. So
it's funny because you were feeling so sorry for the poor little couple who didn't know where they
were. Yeah, that's what I laughed about, and I told them this story. And I will tell, it's time to go on with your gentleman, but I want to tell one quick story on my sister, my blood sister, one story. And if people can't laugh about this one, they just need to leave. Just go ahead and leave. She was a politician. I told you that. I said that on the air Wednesday. She was the first tax assessor and tax collector in that state, female. And, of course, a lot of the people thought she was, they'd get mad at her, you know, because they said, why are you raising my taxes? Like, she really had control over that. But we were campaigning. It was hot. We were way out in the middle of the farmlands, and we were on a dirt road, and here's this typical couple, older couple, sitting on the front porch, rocking, drinking tea. And Betty and the dad, you know, the man had a shotgun, you know, beside him. That's just the way people, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere. And she said, oh, I'm so tired. And she said, but we had that hamburger, and I know my mouth smells like onion. She says, oh, but I have mint, you know, a breath thing. And I forgot what it was, but it was green, right? Now, it was hot. It was in July. We get out of the car. And she's just a great gal. She's, you know, just very humble, a true statesman, you know, not a politician. Left politics because she wouldn't buy into the system. But anyway, I'm out in front of her, and she's just talking and laughing to that couple, total strangers. And they looked at her, and that man actually put his hand on the gun, on the, you know, the shotgun. And I thought, well, what in the world? And I turned around, and her mouth was totally green. Her teeth were green. Her tongue was green all around. And I started a signal, and I was pointing to her mouth, and she was going, yes, I'll have some tea. Thank you so much. And then I couldn't stop laughing, and I couldn't, and I lost my breath. I could not get my breath enough to explain what was going on. I finally pulled her back to the car and just showed her her mirror, you know, in the mirror, the rear, and she was so embarrassed, you know, and then the couple, of course, started laughing once they figured out. But that was the most embarrassing moment of my sister's life. Right now I do not remember what that was. And,
oh, that is so funny.
But, yeah, I could not get enough breath to tell her. And the more I would wipe her mouth and my mouth, you know, it's just so anyway, that's my politician story. And I tell people, I know when somebody's a politician. I can smell them a mile away.
It's their breath.
Yeah, and therefore, if somebody in another realm gets involved in politics, you know, whether it be business and they get into the political arena or ministry, I go, ooh, what do I smell here? thank you for letting me tell that one story. That was a funny story.
Okay, and I'll add one more to Dr. Madan Kataria. This is another family story, and it involves my own child, my son. And he was about 2.5 years old. And my sister had sent him this yellow chicken for Easter. It was just a plastic yellow chicken of no consequence, really. Just a silly plastic toy. And she had sent it to him in an Easter basket. But for some reason, his little 2.5-year-old heart really got attached to that silly yellow chicken, and he took it with him everywhere. He carried it around all the time. You could hardly see Nathan except that he had this yellow chicken. And so we went to the grocery store one day, and he was with us. It was my first husband, Bob, and I, and Nathan and his yellow chicken. And we lived in a rural area. We were pretty far away from the grocery store. So, you know, we went maybe once a week. We were going through the store, and he was sitting up in the basket, and he asked me to let him down so he could get a drink of water. And I let him down, and he ran across to the little kids' drinking fountain there, and I saw him set his yellow chicken down on the floor, and he got a drink of water, and he came back, and I put him back in the buggy. But he didn't have his chicken, but I didn't notice that, and neither did
chicken.
He. So we did our shopping, and then we went home. And we no sooner pulled in, it was like I said, it was a ways away. We finally got home, pulled in the driveway, and I looked down and I in his lap, and I saw that he didn't have his yellow chicken. And I said, Nathan, honey, where's your chicken? And he looked down in his lap, and at the same time, we both remembered. I went, oh, you left it at the store. And he said, I left my chicken to the store. I left my chicken to the store. And he started to lament. He just kept saying it. I left my chicken to the store. So I said, I'm sorry, honey, but we can't drive all the way back for that chicken. I guess we'll just have to let the chicken go. And he didn't cry or anything. He just lamented. I left my chicken to the store. So my husband and I were working on the motorcycle that was sitting in the driveway, and we had put the groceries away, came back out, we're sitting out on the driveway. My little son went in the house, been about 15 minutes, came back out. He's still talking about this chicken that he left to the store. And he came over to the driveway, and we were both sitting there working on the motorcycle, and he says, I left my chicken to the store. I left my damn chicken to the store. And I said to him, Nathan, you shouldn't say that. So he immediately said, I left my stupid chicken to the store. that's one of those family stories that even his little girl now, Ella Rosa, tells me, Grandma, tell me the chicken story again.
That is too. Do you see what Brother Dave just wrote on the board? Boy, he's in classic form. He and Larry both the last couple of programs. I have a great chicken joke, but I better not pull it.
Yeah, I think I've heard
that.
I don't
know. Now, some young people may not even understand what he's saying there.
Yeah.
I've never raised chickens.
I've heard that joke, yeah. What's a pull it in? Tell
oh
us
my
what a
God. Well, a pullet, now that's going way back in my memory. I knew instantly it's a little chicken, you know, the little pullet. Let me help Brother Dave. Let's see, now when we plucked a chicken, you know what plucking a chicken means. You know, we had to take care of when we were eating chicken, we had to take care of our own chickens.
Yeah.
So when I hear people, she's running around like a chicken with her head cut off. I know exactly. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Okay, that's boring. People probably will I don't know. I saw a special on TV where they had all these kids in school, and they were showing them all these vegetables, and they didn't even know what they were. They didn't recognize corn. They didn't recognize... And I thought it was a good thing you're not showing them animals, you know.
Showing them animals, huh?
Yeah. Oh, but that, you know, now that right there, people say, well, that's not funny. Well, it is to me, because when I start running around like a chicken with my head cut off, I find that kind of funny.
Well, if you've ever seen one. Oh, my gosh.
Now, Brother Dave is saying he doesn't know what a pullet is. I think it's a young chicken. I will find
it. It is a female chicken.
Right, it's a female, and pullet is a little female. I think it's a little hen. Daddy would say, well, go get a pullet, you know.
And it's the opposite of a cock, right? A cock is a male
right,
chicken.
The male, right. Are you looking it up?
I know my chicken. Yeah. Not really.
So, of course, I think the classic for all of us, I would love to hear the most embarrassing moments of your life. Of course, for me, was walking to a very large church when we wore, thank God I wasn't wearing those petticoats that we used to what do we call those, can-cans? Now, I'm telling my age. Yes, folks, I'm 62, and we wore these starch can-can and hoops. Yeah, it never made sense. I was so thankful we stopped that. But anyway, I was wearing a very long, flowing dress at a service. And at that time, that was very appropriate. You know, I would never wear something. I don't wear robes, folks, when I minister. I have at times. And the rest of the story, and I know it's happened to everybody, I go to the bathroom, Paula. And when I come out of the bathroom, my dress was caught up, in my...
Oh, boy, I've heard stories like that.
And I was walking down the aisle, and a woman grabbed me and pulled me to the floor, and I thought, what is she doing? I'm on my way up there to the floor.
I'm on my way up.
She pulled me to the floor. I've been thrown to the floor by the power of the Spirit, but I'm not going to let a human do it. She was trying to keep me from... And then, of course, they just laughed. It was a lot of people there, and I just took it in stride. You have to. As a public speaker or a minister, you have to take it in stride.
That reminds me of that joke, or it's actually probably a true story about the little girl in church with her mother, and the minister's up there at the pulpit doing his sermon, and he says, "Lord, have mercy on us, for we are but dust." And there's a silence, and then the little girl says in a very audible voice, "Mommy, what is but dust?"
I did make a comment last week in the chat room. Being involved in so much interfaith and intercultural activities, humor... has, you have to be sensitive that it takes on a global humor, because things that you say will have no meaning. And I've sat with people from India and Thailand, when we've traveled, and they'll tell a joke, and I don't get it, because I have no frame of reference,
Right, right.
So I've been very careful with that, and some of their words are very offensive to us, but it doesn't translate. We're getting to that, though we are learning how to have common humor.
Well, and we're all also developing a universal language. I mean, it's interesting to watch it happen. We all use French words commonly, and we all know what they mean. We all use Spanish words commonly. Everybody says ciao. Everybody knows what that means. Everybody says okay. Everybody knows what that means. So it's interesting to watch a global language evolve. Someday, I think it'll be, my prediction will be predominantly English.
Right.
But there'll be elements of French and Spanish and, all of the main languages in it.
Well, I called Thailand this morning and was to get in touch with my Buddhist abbot friend, actually inviting him to step into one of the broadcasts on Wednesday, who, by the way, a good friend, a pastor's coming in, a Presbyterian pastor this Wednesday. So that's going to be about ongoing revelation. So that's going to be an interesting show. Had to put my plug in.
Yeah. Oh,
so
good.
I called Thailand, and this monk answered that could not speak English. And I know just a little Thai, and I said, "Sawadee khrap." And he started talking. And now right there, that he recognized me. He says, "Ann? Cowboy, Texas, Ann?" And then he went off in Thai, and I was over here, "Texas, Ann, on Paul, blah, blah, blah." And we next thing you know, we could not stop laughing because I'd go in English, he'd go in Thai, and I'd say, "Bye, y'all." He went, "Bye, y'all, Texas."
"Oh, Texas."
And he said he couldn't speak English, but he did speak just enough. And we, I said, what a great encounter. This man that knew this accent was calling, this had to be Ann, you know, and yet we couldn't even speak each other's language, and we had humor. And that was delightful. That was delightful.
Well, listen, let's play Madame Kataria's tape. He was with us for about, I'd say, about 50 minutes. And
what a contagious laughter he has, Paula.
Oh, gosh, his laughter is infectious, folks. And I just want to forewarn you that he leads Crystalline and I in a little session on laughter, and he makes us laugh together. And you wouldn't think that you can just make yourself laugh, but you really can. And I'm convinced now. I'm ready to start a laughter yoga club. So without further ado, here is our interview with Dr. Madan Kataria. Hello, friends. This is Paula Thompson talking to you from Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. We are waiting for our caller, Dr. Madan Kataria, and Crystalline Beek Larson will be calling in soon. So just hold with us. We'll have our caller soon, calling us from Chicago, and we'll do our interview. Thanks. On Blog Talk Radio, the Cosmic City. Is this Dr. Kataria?
Yes, Dr. Madan Kataria.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, Paula. This is Crystalline Beek Larson.
Hi, Crystalline. Good to have you both on Blog Talk, the Cosmic Citizen. So, without further ado, Crystalline, you want to introduce our guest?
Well, as some of you know, this week on the Cosmic Citizen, we're featuring Dr. Madan Kataria. He's a medical doctor from Mumbai, India. He's popularly known as the guru of giggling, as per the London Times, and he's the founder of the Laughter Yoga Clubs movement, which was started in 1995. And I think I'll let Dr. Kataria tell you more about his background and what brought him to start this new movement. Welcome, Dr. Kataria. Welcome to the Cosmic Citizen Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm so happy to be on this show. And it's great. I want to share with you some of my experiences with laughter yoga.
Well, what made you decide to get started in with, you know, using laughter as a form of therapy?
I have been practicing as medical doctor, a general physician in Mumbai, India, almost for 25 years. And also, I was editing a health magazine called My Doctor. Now, this is about health, and I used to write articles on different systems of healing. In March 1995, I thought of writing an article about laughter, the best medicine. When I researched about the beneficial effects about laughter, I thought, oh, my God, this is such a good medicine, and if you laugh, you don't fall sick. And actually, in Mumbai, very few people laugh. Everybody's under a lot of stress, including myself. So I thought, on 13th March 1995, I got up at 4 in the morning, and suddenly the idea flashed through my mind, if laughter is so good, why not start a laughter club? So I went running at 7 to the public park and spoke to my friends about starting a laughter club. And they started laughing at me. They thought, are you okay, Doc? Yes, I'm okay. And they say, it's okay, but laughter is a good medicine, but it doesn't look nice to laugh in a public park. So I said, let's try it out. So very few people were ready. I got only 4 people out of 400 people around who were ready to laugh with me. In the beginning, we started laughing by telling jokes, and people came up with funny jokes, anecdotes, and something humorous. And our attendance started growing so much so that in 1 week's time, we were 55 people in the laughter group.
Wow. 55 people?
Yes.
In 1 week?
Yeah. And we had a big problem after 10 days that we ran out of good jokes.
We ran out of
at a particular community, racist joke, and then came sexy and vulgar jokes started pouring in, and people didn't like this idea. They told me, stop this laughter club since we don't have anything to laugh about. I said, no, don't stop laughing. Don't stop this laughter club. From tomorrow onwards, we will laugh without jokes. And people say, how? I say, I don't know. Let me find out. I'll give you some breakthrough technology. Give me 1 day's time. And I didn't have an idea what this breakthrough technology would be, how to laugh without jokes. But something within me believed that it's possible. In the night, I was going through a book called Emotions and Health, and I found something amazing. It says, if you can't laugh, pretend laughing, because your body doesn't know the difference, where even if you are pretending to laugh, you get the same health benefits, same physiological changes, whether laughter is real or fake. I said, great. We could make laughter as an exercise. So I went running next day to show people this breakthrough technology that you can laugh without jokes, even if you're pretending to laugh. So we decided to fake it until you make it. I told everybody, since you're getting the same benefits, let's just do ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Until everyone starts to laugh for real.
Yeah, everybody did ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. Within minutes, we were all into tears laughing. And I realized that we didn't laugh so much on best of the jokes in the last 10 days as much we laughed for nothing.
So are you saying that the funniest thing is just people laughing? If you can get people to start laughing, that generates its own humor, and then everybody starts laughing at each other laughing.
Yeah, we all know that laughter is contagious and infectious, until we discovered that we could just pretend in the beginning, and soon it becomes real. Just have an eye contact with others. Because our brain has some mirror neuron cells, which we are mimicking other person's laughter or any emotions. That's why it's infectious.
It does really seem like laughter is contagious, too. When you hear people laughing really heartily, and if they're around you, you just can't hardly help but start laughing with them.
Yeah. So let me explain how we came about the laugh yoga idea.
Okay.
I and my wife, Madhuri, we started creating some laughing exercises and blend it with deep breathing exercise. So we would laugh a few times and then take some deep breathing exercises, they're from yoga. And we thought that laughing and breathing blend very good together because it increases your energy and oxygen levels in the body. And then we thought that this could be a good blend and name it as laughter yoga, because people would take it seriously. Otherwise, they will say laughter club might sound like a goofy or something something for just entertainment or amusement. I thought, no, people should take it as like a healthy way. So we created a new discipline where we laugh for no reason, and we named it as laughter yoga. So I'll tell you what is now laughter yoga all about. It is a concept where anybody can laugh without jokes, without humor. We laugh in a group and do laughter as an exercise in the beginning, but when we look at each other and then be playful like a child, laughter becomes real and contagious. And the whole philosophy is based on the scientific fact that even if you laugh for the sake of laughing, your body doesn't know the difference whether you're laughing for real or fake. And now this idea has become worldwide phenomenon. We just started with 5 people. Now there are laughter clubs in 65 countries. And not only social clubs, there are laughter yoga in companies, corporations, university, fitness center, yoga studios, and facilities like prisons, school children, and many other physically, mentally challenged organizations.
Wow. How long did it take for this idea to spread around the world? You just said you have it in more than 65 countries around the world?
Yes.
So if you started it in
March 1995,
that's a pretty dramatic growth.
Actually, it spread across India within a year. Within 1 year, we could spread like 300 to 400 clubs all over India. And then the news about Laughter Club was flashed on BBC, CNN, you name any television channel through Associated Press. And they put it everywhere. And I started getting invitations from different countries. I tell you why it became popular. Why is it so easy? Why the people are getting benefits? There are 3 reasons why laughter yoga is becoming popular and why we need laughter yoga. Why not? People ask me, I would rather like laugh naturally. Why should we force myself to do laughter exercises? There are 3 reasons. It's reason number 1, laughter that comes in our real life comes for a few seconds here and there at a time. It's not enough. Scientific studies show that if laughter is beneficial effects of laughter will come to you only if you laugh for 10 to 15 minutes. It should be continuous. It should be sustained. Only then you get all the benefits. But laughter is not enough what we get in real life. That's why laughter yoga we do as an exercise, we can do as long as we want. Now, reason number 2, to get the benefits, real benefits of laughter, you have to laugh a bit louder and coming from right from your belly. It's like a belly laughter using your diaphragm. And in social settings, it might not be appropriate to laugh out loud and people might not like this idea. But laughter yoga clubs provide a safe environment for everybody to laugh as loud as you want, because we are doing it as an exercise discipline. And third reason is that we don't have many reasons which makes us laugh in real life, because we always, life is so serious, so much of stress, so much of negativity around. So we disconnected our laughter from reasons of life. We just laugh out of commitment because it's healthy. So we are not depending upon outside conditions to make us laugh. So these are the 3 most important reasons why laughter yoga is really spreading across the world.
Go ahead, Paula, sorry.
To get the maximum benefits, you say at least 15 to 20 minutes, is that correct?
Yeah, at least 15 minutes should be a good belly-rippling laughter.
Okay.
Only then you can find some physiological changes like blood pressure regulation, then the immune system perks up, your muscles are relaxed. It should be like an exercise routine. But we don't get that kind of laughter in real life. People are so stressed out and so suppressed.
Well, the question I was going to ask was what kind of health benefits do people get? But you've answered that primarily. You said that blood pressure can be reduced, immune systems can be...
I put it in five most important benefits of laughter yoga. First is your mood states. You will agree with me that if your mood is good, you're at your best. You do everything well.
Right.
And whether it's your personal life, social life, or business, if you're in a good mood, you're going to perform well. And laughter yoga can change your mood within minutes doing this. Even if you're sad, depressed, stressed out, you do this exercise, your mood changes quickly. So we don't have to depend upon our mood. We can create a good mood within minutes by doing these exercises. And not only you feel good, the good feeling stays all throughout the day. So once you are in a good feeling and you are at your best and you perform to your maximum. Second benefit is that today everybody is having stress, physical stress, mental stress, and emotional stress. And there are many tools we use to reduce stress, but I believe that laughter yoga is the quickest way because it's being done in a group. Many people can get benefit at the same time. Not only reduce, so physical, mental stress can be reduced, many methods, but most important stress which people don't realize is emotional stress with bad relationship at home and in the workplace. So by laughing, you take out all that negative energy, repressed, suppressed emotions. So that leaves a person emotionally much more balanced and one can laugh easily. And all the stress factors can be removed by exercise because it's all both breathing and laughing together. Third benefit is about health. Nowadays, health has become a big issue worldwide. We have a host of illnesses, when you know, blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, psychological problems, depression, insomnia, panic attacks, migraine headaches, and so many other diseases. Now, how laughter yoga help you to maintain a good health? In two ways. One is, if you laugh on a regular basis, you don't fall sick easily in the first place. I have been laughing now almost like 15 years. My immune system has become stronger, and so much so that I don't remember when was the last time I got cough and cold in the last 15 years.
Wow.
And same is the opinion of people who've been laughing regularly. Their frequency of cough and cold has really come down significantly. And some people who were suffering from blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, so they can have a better control over medication. So depression, for example, is a huge problem all over the world. And we have had many people coming to Laughter Club. Many of them stopped antidepressant medication because laughter is one of the best antidotes for depression. Because depressed people never laugh, and if you laugh, you can't get depressed. And likewise, many others suffering from chronic illnesses, pain disorders, arthritis, getting better quality of sleep. So a host of health benefits you get from laughter yoga. And third benefit is quality of life depends upon quality of good friends we have with whom we have caring and sharing relationship. And you'll agree with me, laughing people attract good friends because everybody wants to be with smiling people. Nobody wants to be with a grumpy person. So laughter clubs have become like a family. It attracts, such a good bond and friendship. It really, I tell you, friends are the best treasure in the world because you may find so much of fun with your own people after a while, but friends always are friends. They give you space. They always come and support you when you need them. And this is where power of laughter comes, that to have a good group of friends around you.
And have you found that the laughter yoga clubs, within those clubs, that strong bonds of friendship are maintained?
Yes. For example, in Indian Laughter Club, I can tell you, this is a very common thing to observe, that all laughter club members, they celebrate functions together, celebrate birthdays, they visit each other's houses, and social, not only social function, even all ceremonies, whether it's a birthday, wedding, or somebody dies, somebody is sick, go to the hospital, they always come with flower bouquets to support each other. And so it's like an extended family.
Wow, so it's really a form of community building too, it sounds
like. Yeah. We had several examples, like one lady lost her husband, and she was driven to despair, depressed, and all laughter club members went and sat with her for days together and then dragged her to the laughter club. I said, don't want to get you know, depressed here. Come and laugh with us. She says, I can't laugh my husband. And I said, look, you are not laughing. You're doing laughter as an exercise to lift your spirits. So she started laughing reluctantly, but then she said, I'm glad I came out of depression very quickly with this laughter exercise.
Wow.
Well, it almost trained you. It trains you to remember levity and to remember that there is still joy in life. Even though somebody we love has passed on, we can still have joy in remembering them. And there's many things still to be joyful about, you know, even though something bad has happened. And what I imagine in my mind is I can see a group in a laughter club in a park, and everybody is just hysterical laughing. And what I envision is that you just naturally have other people coming over to see what everyone is laughing about. Is that true? I mean, does the group just naturally grow because people are curious to see what you guys are all so jovial about?
Yeah, laughter yoga is not, I can explain in theory, it's more of an experiential program. And once you do these exercises, then you would really know that what it is all about.
So do you attract, but my point is, do you attract people just because you're laughing? I mean, do people...
Laughter is attractive to many, many people.
Yes, that's what
people are missing. This is what people are missing in their life. So a group of people laughing in the public park is a attraction for many, many people. Now, it's not unknown. Laughter yoga has now become very popular worldwide. Media, press, even so many articles, television programs have been shown all over the world.
Now, do you have a formal training or instruction process for leaders of laughter yoga clubs, or how does it spread just organically?
Yeah. I think I want to laugh before I answer these questions. So I want to show you some of the laughter exercises we do in laughter clubs.
Okay.
And then I'll answer this question.
Okay.
I feel like laughing. I think I've been talking too much.
Okay.
And let me tell you, there are four steps of laughter yoga. First is clapping. We clap and do chant ho ho ha 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 ho ho ha ha ha, and everybody moves around and looks in the eyes doing this warm up exercises. It loosens you up and ready to laugh. Then second step is breathing, deep breathing. We raise our arm like, and breathe deeply, fill up your lungs with oxygen, and exhale, relax. And third, we move around and be like a child, because you can't laugh like a grown-up when you're too much into your head. So we have some playful exercise, be like a child, and it goes like, very good, very good. Yay! The whole group is chanting, very good, very good, yay! And then we move around doing different kind of exercises, like the greeting laughter. We shake hands with each other, look into the eyes, and gently... and then meet different people and shaking and laughing. And then we have a milkshake laughter. We hold two imaginary glasses of milk and mix them up. And that time as if you're drinking. Then mobile phone laughter, cell phone laughter. You hold your mobile phone and as if you're hearing a joke and then start laughing.
Oh, cool.
My personal favorite is Visa bill laughter. Imagine you just receive your bill for Visa card.
Okay.
And just look at your bill and just keep laughing and show it to everyone around in the group.
I love that one.
He's a Bill laughing. Yeah, because how many people really laugh when they see their Visa bill? Oh, that's great.
Like that, yeah. We have hundreds of this playful exercise all over the world. And we take breathing and then very good, very good, yay. Now, this is a part of the programming. We program our body to be happy and create these happy chemicals on command, on request.
Mm.
And,
well, I can tell you, you really have that because you can hardly keep from chuckling, and that's fantastic. I just, you know,
believe me, I was not like that. I was very serious when I was a physician, and then I learned it. So I want to say that everybody can learn to laugh. As children, yeah, we all laugh 300 times, but then we lose it on the way of growing up.
Well, we were talking last week on the show about this phenomenon on YouTube that there's, it started out with this baby laughing. I'm sure you've seen it. This Swedish baby that laughs when his father, like, makes funny noises, and
like,
he just
ding.
Has, yeah, ding, and then the baby just starts cracking up, and there's nothing in the whole world that sounds better than a baby laughing.
Yeah, and this is what we do in laughter class. We just laugh at anything, at nothing.
It's so
and
great.
And the more you laugh, the more you laugh. I mean, that's what's so amazing about it.
It's
I noticed.
Once you learn it, you never forget it.
You guys have a video out there of a group in a factory, it looks like, and they start each morning with these exercises. And just watching it, you have to laugh. It's so funny, but they're doing exactly what you just described. They go around in a circle. They you know, they clap. They say, ha, ha, ho, you know, ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And they start laughing.
I trained them in Mumbai, actually. And are they one, the YouTube with blue dresses?
Right.
Yeah, I put it on my YouTube. I go to this company and make them laugh. They laugh, start the day with laughs.
So have they noticed that their productivity increases? I mean, I think they did say that they're much happier during the day, but have they noticed that they get more done and their productivity increases?
Yes, definitely. They have grown their factory 3 times in the last 3 years. I
won't
say entirely due to laughter, but laughter is one of the major contribution factors for keeping them energized and positive communication. I'd say laughter has played a significant role. There are other factors, but laughter is a significant.
It seems also, too, that it would increase intimacy. That, you know, by doing this together, like you said, it sort of creates communities because people, first of all, you're having them looking in each other's eyes when they're greeting.
People who laugh together work together as a team.
Wow.
It creates a group energy, positive energy.
Wow. Well, it just sounds miraculous and yet so easy, such a simple thing, and yet such profound benefits from it.
Anybody can do it. It's scientifically proven, and it's so simple. Just laugh for the sake of it, and then real laughter just starts springing up.
For much of my life, I have I've used comedy films, you know, videos or programs that no matter how many times I see this film, I always just totally crack up when I'm watching it. You know, it doesn't matter how many times I've been exposed to it, I still find the same scenes just really hilarious. And I keep them at hand so that when I'm feeling particularly low or down, I watch them to cheer myself up or to feel better. And but it's great to hear that you don't even need to have a joke or a film or something funny.
Or anything to laugh.
You
actually,
just start laughing.
Yeah, not only laughter groups. Now I'm teaching people how to laugh all by yourself at home. You can just.
Right. That was my question. That's what I want to know. Is that possible?
Yes. See, once you're in a laughter group, your body will acquire the intelligence of laughing without a reason and doing these exercises. Then once you learn those exercises, you can do it anywhere. And then I devised special techniques. Actually, I come up with a DVD, Laughter Yoga Alone, which can be found on my website. It's laughteryoga.org. And there are some techniques I have used for several years. I start my day with laughter in the morning. I start laughing at 4 in the morning. And first I do some quiet laughter and silently. And slowly it grows and grows and grows.
Wow. And this is sort of off the topic, but how is your marriage improved or been affected by your both being involved in this laughter yoga?
We are much more stronger in marriage. Even if we have arguments, we laugh. We just point fingers at each other and say, ah, ha, 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 ha.
That's great.
And then when she gets angry with me, I'll start talking gibberish.
You make her laugh, is that?
Yeah,
that can absolutely, laughter can diffuse the most desperate situation. I'm reminded of a favorite film of mine called Steel Magnolias, where they're walking along and she's just lost her beautiful daughter. Her daughter has died and she is just so anguished, and she's walking along with her dear friends and they're all following her. And they're so troubled, and she's just letting go of all of this pent-up angst and sorrow at losing her daughter. And her friend does something very funny. And so it's the only time in my life where I've seen a film that actually made me laugh or cry, first cry and then laugh in the same, almost
the same time.
Yeah, at the same time. And it's laughter through tears. And one of the comments is laughter through tears is my favorite emotion, and it just shows the power of laughter, that it can diffuse even the most agonizing situation. If someone can make you laugh, they can get you out of yourself and over whatever the emotion, the strong emotion that you're feeling is. And Crystalyn, you quoted that quote that if you can laugh about it, you can get over it. That's Bill Cosby's quote, right?
Right. I just put that on my webpage on Facebook last week. If you can laugh about it, you can get over it.
Yeah. What we say in Laughter Yoga Club, that everybody can laugh when time is good. But design of life is not like that. We all have some troubles. We have some problems in life. So how do you laugh when you're facing challenges in life? Somebody's died, somebody's lost money in business, somebody's lost job, or you have an argument with some friend, somebody's hurting you. So how do you laugh then? Now, doing laughter yoga on a regular basis creates a positive mental attitude, and that helps you to get through difficult time with a smile on your face. So laughter yoga not only helps you when time is good, you can really cultivate that positive attitude, and it comes automatically when you start laughing on a regular basis, and we call it the inner spirit of laughter.
Oh, well, that was really the topic of the show, is, you know, how it affects spirituality, or, you know, the spiritual benefits or the uplifting spirit of laughter.
Actually, I define spirituality definition. For me, spirituality is not going to Himalayas and doing yoga for 9 years and getting connected to God.
Mm-hmm.
My definition of spirituality is if you can raise your spirits by yourself and raise someone else's spirits, you're spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we do in laughter yoga. You raise your spirits by laughing and help others, be kind, generous, help other people. And you not only make others laugh, you raise somebody's spirits by doing selfless service, being kind and generous. And this automatically comes when you start laughing.
And when you're happy, I think the lesson, too, is that laughter and happiness is infectious. You know, they say that misery, there's an old saying in America, at least, that misery loves company. And somebody who's sad just likes to make everybody else around them sad. But also joy craves fellowship. And so when you're really happy and when something is making you happy, that's infectious, too. And we can actually infect each other with laughter and with joy by being that, you know, by being laughing and joyful.
We already started this infection. We call it laughter happidemic.
Happidemic?
I love it.
We already started this laughter happidemic, and it's spreading across the world.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I think I have always felt that laughter and humor and, you know, not taking yourself too seriously was a very important part of spiritual growth.
Yes.
And I did a study group once, gosh, more than 20 years ago, on happiness. And I had one of the women come up to me afterward and say, "This is a most unusual topic of study for a spiritual study group." She says, I never thought of being happy as being an essential part of spirituality. She says, it was almost the opposite. She says, I was raised to believe that when you're worshiping or when you're connecting with spirit, that it was a very solemn occasion.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I had the benefit of being raised in West Africa, where, you know, people laugh a great deal more than people do in our society here. So for me, it just seems like a natural component that the two would go together. But do you find that with some people that you talk with about this concept, that they are resistant to seeing the spiritual component?
No, we don't really make this spiritual component very obvious. We just promote laughter as a healthy exercise.
It's more of a byproduct.
Yeah, and then spiritual process is the outcome of what we do. So
mm-hmm.
It's very subtle, and that's why we don't find much resistance. Because we can easily be branded as religious. We are not.
Yoga is associated with a spiritual practice anyway, so just the word yoga really kind of brings in that connotation. When you say it's laughter yoga, it takes that on a little bit. You probably don't even have to say it. And obviously, laughter is so good for the whole being. Nobody can walk away from a good laugh feeling like they haven't benefited in every way from it.
That's true. That's true.
You know, so that, to me, that's really, you know, the amazing part of this. It's so simple. I think I just can't commend you enough for this work, because the world needs it so much. I mean, the world.
What a wonderful service you've provided.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm so blessed that God has given me this opportunity to manifest this wisdom. And by the way, 2nd May is the World Laughter Day, where people all over the world will be laughing for world peace. And people will be coming out in public parks and taking some processions and laugh together in public places.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we invited you on the show, was that we decided to dedicate this month before May 2nd to spiritual humor as the topic of our show. And we wanted you to come on to tell us more about the World Laughter Day, because we are encouraging all of our listeners to participate in World Laughter Day on May 2nd. So maybe you can tell us how that came about.
Yeah, World Laughter Day I created in 1998, when I thought that laughter is a universal language and it connects the entire humanity, and we can achieve the world peace through laughter groups, because we find laughter can bring people together like a family. So it has no language barrier, because we are not laughing at anything, because you're laughing without a reason. So this was a real connector of the people. So we initiated a movement and designated first Sunday of May. Every May is a World Laughter Day from Laughter Yoga International, our organization. And
what's the name of your organization?
Laughter Yoga International. It's a non-profit organization which is dedicated to bring good health, joy, and world peace. This is our mission statement.
Oh.
We want people to be healthy, joyful, and bring about world peace. Now, people ask me, how can you bring world peace through laughter? Now, the formula is very simple. When you laugh, you change. And when you change, the world around you changes.
Wow, that's beautiful. And so true, and so obviously true.
Yeah. And now, please, I appeal to all listeners who are listening to this show that you must laugh for at least 1 minute on 2nd May, wherever you are, just for the world peace. Just crack up for no reason. And maybe you can find out from our website, worldlaughterday.org. There are so many groups who are laughing. You can join them in the park and have fun.
Now, that sounds wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
If I wanted to start a laughter club, what would I need to do, Dr. Madan?
Yeah. Laughter clubs are free for everyone. And just to start a laughter club, you need to be trained as a leader. So we have several leader training programs going on our website, laughteryoga.org. So if you forget, just put in the Google Laughter Yoga and we are number one. So we have various events, training programs around the world, and there are almost like 600-700 leaders and teachers in America. And all you need is some little bit of training, weekend training we have. You can become a laughter leader certified.
I assume that if I wanted to join a laughter club, I could go on the same website and see if there's one nearby.
Find club. You click on find clubs. So if there is a club around you, just join it. See, nobody will bother about no forms to be filled, nothing, no fuss. Ha ha ha, just laugh.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. Well, I'm certainly willing to commit to laughing for at least a minute, probably longer, on May 2nd.
No, not May 2nd, just now. We all laugh for the world peace.
Okay.
So you're there now with me, with the master. So let's all laugh for at least 1 minute. For no reason, for the world peace. Ready?
All right.
One,
yes.
Two, three, go.
That's another old saying. I'm sure you've heard it many times, Dr. Kataria.
Well, and I would like to comment, too, just on what it feels like now after just finishing laughing for a minute. I can feel it in my neck. I can feel my neck muscles relaxing afterwards. I feel like almost every muscle in my face has been engaged. I feel it all throughout my abdomen, the sides of my torso, and even in my upper back and lower back. I just feel much more relaxed, and I can feel tingling all over my body. So So,
and
if you,
you know
just
what
look
else?
At what your own body does, yeah?
My heart chakra just opened right up.
Yay.
Oh, yeah.
Which would explain what you said earlier, Dr. Kataria, about bonding in these clubs and how people bond with each other and how they become more emotionally attached to each other because the heart chakra opens up when you laugh.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that was a great experience. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye, everybody. And have fun and keep laughing. Let's end up laughing once more.
Okay.
Hey, we're going in again.
Bye-bye, keep laughing.
Well, thank you so much for being on our program, Dr. Kataria. We are so grateful that you took time to be with us.
Love you all.
Love you.
Keep
up the good work.
Bye-bye.
Thank you
bye-bye.
So much.
Bye-bye.
Well, what a pleasant person to have on the air, Paula.
Oh, you know what? I'm gung-ho. I am going to...
I'm hooked.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to buy his DVD. I can't imagine that there would be anything a person could do for exercise that would be more beneficial than that. I can't imagine it.
No, I can't either.
I mean, to just... And, you know, you see those videos of him on YouTube and the work he's done. I highly recommend to our listeners, go look him up online. His name is Dr. Madan, M-A-D-A-N, Kataria, K-A-T-A-R-I-A. His website is laughteryoga.org. He is the founder of World Laughter Day. And all the information is there. He started a foundation, Laughter Yoga International. I'm going to go see if there's a club nearby me. I wouldn't mind getting trained. And
I think it'd be a wonderful thing to do as a part of starting a worship service.
You know, Chris,
to go around and laugh together and look in each other's eyes and shake hands and make funny, goofy faces at each other. You can see on their videos on YouTube some of the, you know, crazy things that they do during these yoga sessions, but they're just hilarious to watch.
And you and him touched on something so tender and beautiful to me, and that is the element of childhood. He said, you know, how you go around in a circle and you want to bring in that childlikeness, and we know that our Master Jesus admonished us to do the same thing. He said, become like a little child, joyful, trusting, easy believing. And you can just see how laughter opens that up, the joy of a child, the innocence of a child. And you mentioned that wonderful YouTube video where that baby's laughing and you just have to laugh because that laughter, that pure, innocent laughter is so infectious. You just have to laugh along with that child. To me, there's nothing like the joyful sounds of children. Nothing more beautiful and peaceful and comforting to me than to hear children playing and laughing. One thing I love about summer so much is I can open my window and the noise of the children in the neighborhood comes into my space. And I hear them outside playing. I just love that. I love that sound.
There is something really magical about that sound. And I have vivid recollections of times when I heard my nieces or nephews or other children close to me, my stepdaughter, just having that sort of childish guttural laugh that just goes through their whole body. And I don't know if you're familiar with the show The Actor's Studio, where a gentleman interviews famous actors on the air and on television. And at the end of the show, he has a series of questions that he asks them. And one of the questions he asks is, what's your favorite sound? And the overwhelming majority of answers to that question, although throughout the years there have been hundreds of different answers, one of the most commonly agreed upon answers is the sound of children laughing.
Yes. And they get so tickled by silly things. You know, it's almost like something we forget to watch something silly like a cartoon. Or we just get so serious that we forget that life really is funny if you look at it with those eyes, you know, those childlike humorous eyes that see the humor in it. And you know, I just wanted to point out too that this is something that's been known for quite a while, that laughter is infectious. That's why every sitcom you've ever watched has a sound, you know, a laugh track, what they call a laugh track on it.
Yeah, a soundtrack with canned laughter.
Right, because if you hear somebody else laugh, that in a sense gives you permission to laugh. And a lot of times a comedian will put a plant in the audience, and this person has a good laugh, an infectious laugh, and the more this person laughs, then the more everybody laughs. And you know,
I had never heard that before. That's very interesting.
Yeah,
and I'll bet very effective.
Yes, very effective, because if you have a person that has a good belly laugh, that's just really infectious, and then everybody around that person will start to laugh, and then the more they laugh. I mean, the more people laugh, it's just like what the three of us just experienced, and all you got to do is start to laugh. Laughter itself is funny. Which is just, it's almost
and it's
too
fun.
Obvious. It's fun and funny, yeah.
Fun and funny.
You noticed how several times he just broke out into a chuckle, and every time he did that, I wanted to laugh.
Absolutely.
He has a great laugh. It's a very infectious laugh.
Well, and what a wonderful concept to be bringing to the world. I just think that is really, really amazing how rapidly it caught on, not only in his own neighborhood, but then rapidly spread all over the world.
Well, and you know, you pointed out you grew up in Africa, and they were more, and they laughed more readily. You know, sometimes I think that one of the sorrows of the material, the materialism on the planet, is that material things tend to weigh us down. And the more we have, the more we're responsible for, the heavier our burden, the heavier our responsibility. We carry the weight of those things, and in a way, materialism weighs people down to the point that where they forget that there is something to laugh about. It's not just all responsibility and work, which seems to me like in America we really have that a lot. We just are so darn serious, and you know, we go and we pay somebody to make us laugh. And I think what Dr. Kattari is saying is you don't have to pay somebody to laugh. You can laugh every day. You can make yourself laugh. You can learn to train yourself to laugh and learn to laugh. And the more you laugh, the lighter you become. And I had to think when he was...
The more you'll spread it around, too.
Yeah. I had to think when he was talking about lightning, I had to think about ascension, right? You know, I kept thinking, yeah, you're ascending. When you laugh, you're ascending spiritually. Because you lighten up, everything gets lighter.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the word light, you know, L-I-G-H-T, light. Let's bring light in, light and life. No more darkness and death. How about light and life?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a great connection to make, Paula. That really is, because I think it's not only something that lifts your spirit, but literally lifts the spirit of everyone around you.
Right. And I've noticed it when I'm, you know, he said when you're cranky or you're grouchy, nobody wants to be around you. And it's so true, you know, whereas when you're in a great mood, you just naturally lighten up everybody's mood. And you know, that's something that I've noticed in my life. When people are responding to me in a negative way, I look within and I say, okay, what am I doing? I'm projecting something that's crabby. I'm in a bad mood. I need to change my attitude, and then people will change their attitude towards me. And, you know, you just know when you're in a bad mood. I mean, I get this image of a little rain cloud following you.
A little black cloud.
Yeah, a little black cloud. It's a storm, and you're like a storm walking around with a storm coming. And, of course, nobody wants to be around you if you are, you know, a storm cloud.
Yeah, danger, danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, danger, stay away.
Stay away. Run away.
You project that, you know, you end up projecting it even though you don't mean to. And the other side of that is if somebody's in a bad mood, you can maybe lighten them up a little bit. And the lesson is we never know what's happened to a person today. You know, you don't know that they may have heard the worst news they've ever heard. So, you know, take an opportunity to be light and make a difference in a person's day. He's right. It really is a service. It's a loving service.
And what a wonderful concept to spread around in our local or regional areas too. I'm sure we all have some places that we engage on a regular basis where things tend to be really solemn or somber. What a wonderful concept to bring to that group and say, hey, let's start the day with this, or let's start our meeting with this.
Right.
Let's create this new ritual in our little team or community or workplace.
Right.
To do on a regular basis together.
I'm committed to spreading this laughter yoga.
Me too. I'm pretty impressed with this.
Yeah, me too. Thanks so much.
I'm sure I can use the health benefit.
Well, you know, you would be a good test case. Really, it's interesting. I would love to see if you noticed permanent improvement in your, you know, you get the migraine headaches and stuff.
Right. Well, I was really surprised after just a minute of that hearty laughter how much I could feel it in the back of my head and neck. I could feel the tension. The tension was sort of growing while you were laughing, but then when you stopped laughing, it just released all the tension there, and you could feel this energetic shift just buzzing through your body, this electricity shifting around your body. It was a really interesting experience to observe in my own self.
It's awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Well, we're just about out of time, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we are. We're down to a minute. So.
For this recording this week.
We'll wrap it up here, but I really appreciate your finding Dr. Kataria for us. He was a wonderful guest.
It was a miraculous sequence of events that brought him here to our show today, and we're very grateful to all those who participated in helping that come together.
Hear, hear. Thanks to our angels, our unseen friends.
Thanks to our unseen friends, you bet. We can almost...
Well, friends, this is Paula back again, and I just want to say that was our interview with Dr. Madan Kataria. And we're live again. And Anne, are you still with me?
Yes, yes. And really enjoyed that. Second time around. And this time, what's interesting, I laughed even more. I find that interesting. His destiny, I believe, totally was to do what he is doing. I will tell you a story about laughter. One night I was very ill. I was, you know, during that time when I got very ill. We all have our down times, most of us that are mortals. And a friend of mine came over. I said, please help me go find a service, you know, where I can, you know. Well, on the way over there, she said, what you need to do is laugh. And she started laughing. And however, Paula, she wasn't in that pr- proper space with it. I can't explain it. It didn't work.
It didn't work. Yeah, and he is clearly there. I mean, I agree with you absolutely. This is his guest, or this is his gift. But before we go on down this road, I really want to give, I believe we have a caller who's been hanging on for a while, and I think
wonderful.
Our good friend Richard, Dr. Rick Beek, Crystalline's dad,
he was the one who
this concept of laughter yoga to Crystalline and why she actually wanted to have Dr. Kataria on the show. So let's see if this is Rick with us. Rick, are you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Cognitive.
I pressed one earlier. I didn't know I had to press it again.
Oh, no, you're good. You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay.
Thank you so much for bringing Dr. Kataria to our attention. And Crystalline told me that you introduced this concept at a retreat in the Southeast last year and got everybody laughing for a minute. And she said that the whole retreat was better and lighter because of it.
I can't imagine anything except sincere grief. I know some terrible disappointing event where you simply have to take time to grieve and pull yourself together. But once that urgent grief and loss and disappointment passes and the emotion begins to fade, you can often introduce laughter and it enhances your mourning. It enhances your grief, because you can remember the good things. The Urantia book talks about almost everything is good. There are just some bad spots here and there, and you begin to realize that even if you have a great loss or a great disappointment, it's not an eternal event. It will pass, and all things pass, but the goodness and the truth and the beauty goes on forever and ever.
Well, and Anne was just mentioning that once in a health catastrophe that she was going through, somebody encouraged her to laugh, but that person wasn't able to get her to laugh. It wasn't the same. And we were commenting about how Dr. Kataria is just so sincere. She had made the comment that she thinks this is his gift. Would you agree with? I mean, he starts to chuckle, and you just have to laugh. He's got the most sincere, heartfelt laugh.
Yes, and he obviously cares a lot about people, and he wouldn't do anything to hurt them, and he would probably sense when laughter is not appropriate, and
right.
he would not introduce it at the wrong time. But
right.
one of my aphorisms is 1 + 1 = 11. You can do a lot of things by yourself, but when you're in tune with somebody else, you're laughing together, you're working together, you're achieving something worthwhile together, it's like multiplied by 11.
Oh, wow.
Wow, I didn't know that. By 11. Hello, nice to talk to you here.
That's Anne, by the way, Rick.
Yes. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Rick. That's interesting. And you know, Rick, you were talking about grief. You know, the Urantia book warns us against sometimes people in the Urantia movement try to move away from too much about rituals. And I really respect the ceremony of the grieving process that we go through. In my bloodline, when you go and you have the funeral, and there's this process, and even during the service, people begin to tell stories that start bringing forth laughter. And these are these are the great Baptists. And then we go after the service and eat, partake of a common meal, and that's
within 15 to 30 minutes, everybody's laughing. And I think that's a very powerful process.
Yes, it is.
And people that avoid that, you know, they don't, and that out of that comes the release of that's some strong rituals there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And you're a minister, right?
Well, no.
Missionary,
when I was a young kid, they thought I was going to become a minister.
I don't know where I got that missionary. Where did I get that from?
I was a missionary.
You were a missionary.
Actually, yeah.
Well, I think the missionaries are the greatest ministers on the planet, sir.
Well, actually, I was an unusual missionary. I had been commissioned by the church when I was a sophomore in college. But when I was a sophomore in medical school, I left the church. But they refused to revoke my commission. They said, if you want to go to a place that needs a doctor, we'll take you. You don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to agree with everything. But if you want to serve people and love people and care for people, you're welcome. So I had some difficulty dealing with the other missionaries because I wasn't taking communion, the Eucharist, with them. But I did go to church. I prayed. I sang hymns, even though I didn't always believe every word in the hymn. The spirit was wonderful, and I've always sung in choirs, and I love praying. I love worshiping and being with other people who are doing this. And then I had a dream where my guardian angel told me to quit rebelling and join the mainstream of the church. We were attending a Catholic church at the time, so I talked to the priest, and he knew I didn't believe what Catholics were supposed to believe, but he referred me to another priest who said, if you want to be a Catholic, we'll take you. And I said, well, I don't believe all that. He says, nobody believes everything you're supposed to believe. The Catholic Church just kept adding and adding and adding all these things you're supposed to believe. Nobody believes all of them. And as long as you can say the creed and you're in the spirit of things, you can be a member. And so it was quite comfortable. And when something happens that I don't quite believe in, I don't make a big fuss about it. I look at overall the benefit. And the thing I keep asking myself, does this do more good than harm? And if it does, then I'm going to do it.
That's a great question. And I still enjoy attending services, and you know, of course, some of my favorite people through the years were, still is, are ministers, because true, called, appointed, anointed ministers, they have to have a sense of humor, or you can't do what you do. If you're, you know, you have to, and the trained speakers were, and of course, we've talked about this before, Paula. If you're a trained speaker, preacher, one of the first things you learn is to tap into the emotional stream of humor. That's very important.
Well, of course. And any good speaker, you know, oftentimes a good speaker will get up and tell a little joke, and everybody, you know, it just sets the mood, and then it's light from there on out. So, you know, Rick, you had said in a post to Crystal, and this list of the benefits of laughter and
there's
being
no
a medical,
end.
I mean, that means so much to me coming from you because, A, you're very much a natural healer. You are a medical doctor, but you very much believe in natural medicine and natural modalities of healing and creating health in the body. So,
well, when I found out in the 1970s, or maybe even a little earlier, that diagnosis and treatment always does more harm than good, except in emergencies, I began making home visits to be on my patients' turf under their control, and I did not diagnose and treat. I didn't try to find out what was wrong. I just focused on what was good, how to build on it, told them to focus on their number one concern and then stop thinking and allow suggestions to come to them about the most promising next step to take regarding their concern. and 100% of my patients found their own way to get better.
Wow.
And I always sent a bill to the insurance companies, and they would never pay me. But after 3 years, I got a check from Blue Cross Blue Shield saying, we don't pay for what you do, but the patients who call you their doctor used to cost us thousands of dollars every year. Now they don't cost us anything.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how they help themselves, but we just went through a simple process where they were open to suggestions about the most promising next step to take regarding whatever their concern was. I didn't even know what their concern was. I didn't have to. They focused on it. They got suggestions. They acted on it. And 90% of the time, it was beneficial. And the 10% when it wasn't beneficial, they knew before they got too far down the road that they were on the wrong track. And every one of them knew exactly what they should have done. After they made this honest mistake, they knew exactly what they should have done. And when they did that, the benefit just blew them away. It was like it was too good to be true.
You know,
so I'm convinced that life is designed to help us do what needs to be done. If we're sincere and we're looking for the most promising step to take, regardless of what our concern is, we'll find it and we can do it. And the joy and the satisfaction and the love and the wonderful feeling that people get when they realize that they have this gift, they can use it anytime they wish. It's a very healthy, happy thing to do. And laughter is certainly one of those things that fit into that.
You know, I believe that the body tells its own story. You don't have to be invasive with the body. It tells its own story. And of course, as Urantia book readers, we know that the greatest physician in all of creation, that the architect of the human body, lives within our own heart. And so if we do just what you just said and really look within for the things that made us ill in the first place, I'm always amazed by this search for the cure, but not the cause. If they found the cause of the illness, then they could cure it. But they're never looking for the cause.
Well, the reason they don't want to find and cure the cause is because they can't make any money on it.
There you go. And what you're saying...
I was very active in the organized medicine in Chicago. I was the chief medical officer for the health department for 4 years, and I said we've got to reduce the deaths associated with health care. And some of the doctors got really angry at me and called me names, and then they would come back privately and apologize. They said, we checked with the professors. There are 7 medical schools in the Chicago area, and they'd go check with somebody, and they said, the professor said, you're right, we do. We kill more people than we save. And I said, okay, now that you know the way we practice medicine does more harm than good, what are you going to do about it? And every one of them just kind of hung their head in shame and said, well, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I don't know what else to do. I've got house payments and college expenses. And, you know, well, I could not bring myself to kill people just to make a living. But
yeah,
they do it. And not one of them quit practice or tried doing what I did, which is highly successful, but of course I went broke and I'm still in a lot of debt because I haven't found a way to make money on this.
Well, you know, I saw my doctor of 30 something years a few days ago, and I really admire how his consciousness has shifted over the years. And he began over the years to realize, and he would say, you figured out too, you know, work with me here. He never, because I always question, I always research. And the other day, I went in with something, and he said, I just don't know. And I admire that, too. And he said, we're not going to go through all those tests. And he said, I think you just need to laugh. And he actually said that. Just go out and enjoy, do some things.
And then I began, having known him so long, began to bring up some old stories and old things that he and I have experienced all these years with kids and, you know, family. And we sat there and laughed and laughed. This was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And when I walked out, there were three other medical doctors. I didn't realize this. And two nurses. And they were all, we had a crowd outside the door. And they were just, laughing. I said, well, that's the best. I said, thank you. Thank you, doctor. And I thought that was, now that's a coincidence that that happened. And that was before I knew what you were going to be doing here, Paula. So I just love that. I just love that. And, you know, I called our son. I didn't know you were going to be on the phone with us, Rick. And I called our son, who has a keen sense of humor, 33-year-old. And sometimes it is so dry. You know, the younger generation can have a very, maybe we did and we just don't remember. But whenever he needs to laugh, I said, Brad, I know you love to laugh. And I've heard you by yourself laughing. What do you watch? He said, oh, I watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. And then, of course, I always watch Ghostbusters. He and the other two can actually have the entire script of Ghostbusters memorized. They can sit down and go through the entire movie. But Mystery Science Theater 3000, y'all ever watch that?
No.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's old science fiction movies, you know, the worst you could ever imagine, you know. And there's these little, how do you describe the little shadows in the front, Paula?
Well, it's like there's these three guys watching the movie, and the sound is turned down, and they're dubbing it. They're improvising the dialogue, and what comes out, it's just really, it's improv comedy, and it's hysterical. It's really funny.
It's improv comedy, and you know, and it's those old science fiction movies that we watched in the 50s and the 60s, you know. Very, very funny.
Well, you
because
know, sadly,
I love the movies that do the takeoff on the serious movies. You know, like when Airplane first came out, for me personally.
Oh, yeah.
You know, wow.
Oh, me too, Ann. Those were great movies. You know, we're down to 2 minutes now, and I just want to thank you, Rick, for calling in, and I would like to invite you back too to do a show specifically on natural health. And
oh, that
and,
would be wonderful. Thank you,
yeah.
Rick. Is so wonderful to. I'm sure we've perhaps seen each other along the way, but nice to meet you formally here. And you have a delightful
same
daughter.
Here.
Delightful daughter. Love her dearly.
You have a beautiful family, Rick. I just want to tell you that. I love your family. They're kind, they're loving, they're caring, they're generous. Your children grew up to be really good people. So thank you, Dad. You did a great job with your children and your family. You have a wonderful family.
You
well,
did
I
good.
I get more good out of them than any good I ever did for them.
Well, and we can probably all say that as parents, huh?
Yes.
So thanks for calling in, and I hope you will come back and do a show with us specifically on your expertise, as a doctor and natural healing. Crystalline has shared with me over the years many things that you have told her, and I really appreciate the things that, you know, your beliefs about medicine and about the body's ability to heal itself.
Yeah, the important thing is anytime you're providing services for people with good intentions, you should measure the outcome. And if they're getting sick or dying or having difficulties that increase because of the service, you can't keep doing it. And almost all health and social services do more harm than good if they're carefully measured, except for emergency care.
Right.
That's very honest, isn't it, Paula?
That's what I love. I mean, this is a medical doctor, folks, with years and years and years of experience. And
well, I came out of my tunnel of health issues when I said I have to let go. I was, you know, all these tests that they were putting me through, the tests were making me sicker than
And I just said, okay. And that's when I flew to L.A. to see the holistic medical doctor out there. And he
Well, I was in charge of a nursing home, the Wisconsin mm-hmm. Veterans Home, for a short time, 11 months. And the nurses there were passing out pills to people, and I began taking them off their medicine. And they were afraid to quit. They said, these things are keeping me alive. I said, well, let's have the pharmacist put some milk sugar in a capsule and put your medicine in a capsule, and you take one for 1 week and the other for the next week, and you tell me which one works. And they said, okay. And in every case, they did better on the milk sugar than on the medicine they were taking. And I began emptying out the beds. So they started making false rumors about me, and I was in the newspapers, and people got angry at me, and they said, you're still on probation, so we're going to let you go. And they hired somebody who put everybody back on their pills, and the nurses came back to work, and everybody was happy.
Wow.
Yeah, and sick, right? Sick and happy.
Yeah. There are a lot of ways to make
money.
And
I got well.
By
yes.
hurting people, but there are not a lot of ways to make money by doing good.
Right. Which is
what
that.
A great show, Paula. We're running over, so that's wonderful.
Hey, Rick, will you come back on?
Please.
Sure, anytime.
Wonderful.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. I'd love to do a show with you.
Okay.
And thanks for calling in, and thanks for alerting us all to the good doctor, Madan Kataria. He was just absolutely wonderful.
Great.
And thank you, Ann, for joining me today. And
always
thank
enjoy it, Paula.
Yeah. Love you guys a lot.
Love you, Paula.
Have a wonderful week.
God bless.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet, the letter X, net.com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.